Dear listener, we hope that you've been enjoying the variety of podcasts that we have on our network. Now is your opportunity to help us by telling us a little more about you. Please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey and complete our listener survey so that we can learn more about you and your listening habits. Again, please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey. Thanks so much.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. Sit back, relax. We've got a great show for you today. Speaking of relaxing, our guest today will be a rebroadcast with Dr. Carolyn Deitch, who wrote a book called The Road to Calm. Yes, very calming. We have a wonderful assortment of music throughout the show. We actually opened up with an ancient Spanish Jewish music piece. I hope you enjoyed that little bit that we were able to play for you. We've got other music just sprinkled liberally throughout the next hour. The portion of the week is the portion of Vayechi. It's Genesis 46 to the end of the book. Today is the 10th day of the Hebrew month of Teves. It is a fast day, and we'll talk about the significance of the day. And you want to stay for the end. The story at the end is the poignancy of this story. Is just, I was just blown away when I came across this story. And I hope I can convey that blown awayedness. That's at the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. The U.S. House of Representatives voted 342-80 to rebuke the U.N. for Resolution 2334, calling upon the White House to veto future U.N. Security Council measures which seek to impose solutions to final status issues or are one-sided and anti-Israel. The Senate is expected to take a similar vote condemning that U.N. resolution. Alar Azaria, the IDF medic who last March shot and killed a wounded Palestinian terrorist, was convicted of manslaughter by a military tribunal. The verdict was met by calls of pardon by a full spectrum of the Israeli populace. Prime Minister Netanyahu will likely pardon Azaria if he is given jail time. In two separate shooting attacks in Haifa, one man was killed and the other was badly wounded. Police say the attacks were nationalistically motivated, i.e. terrorism, and are still looking for the attackers, i.e. the terrorists. The Israeli who was seriously wounded in the truck-ramming attack on an outdoor market in Berlin last month regained consciousness this week, only to discover that his wife had been killed. Plans are being made to fly Rami Eliakim back to Israel to further his recuperation. Major Haggai Ben-Ari, who was critically wounded during Israel's operation in Gaza in 2014, passed away Tuesday. Ben-Ari was wounded in July 2014. He suffered a head wound from sniper fire as the forces he led came across Hamas terrorists. Ben-Ari had been unconscious since then. In some other news, Sweden and Holland are the first countries to buy the new Israeli tank defense system, the Iron Fist. The Iron Fist senses incoming rockets and destroys them without detonating the warhead. That is way cool. Bomb threats were called into the Chabad Center of South Orlando and the Orlando Jewish Community Center. Both centers were evacuated, but police did not find any explosives. And finally, Israel experienced higher than normal rainfall in December. 12 inches of rain fell, raising the level of the Kinneret, Israel's primary reservoir, more than 4 feet. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in a growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, and visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We will be talking with Carolyn Deitch. Dr. Carolyn Deitch is a clinical psychologist in private practice for over 25 years. She's the director of the Center for the Treatment of Anxiety Disorders in Farmington Hills and acts as a consultant for the University of Michigan School of Medicine Department of Complementary and Alternative Research, as well as the Wayne State University School of Medicine. Dr. Deitch received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Michigan Society of Clinical Hypnosis and the Presidential Award from the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. And with that, we welcome Dr. Carolyn Deitch to the Jewish Hour. How are you, Carolyn?
I'm just fine. I'm halfway up to northern Michigan, beautiful part of our state.
Oh, wonderful. Safe driving there. Okay, so you've written a book. It's called the Road to Calm Workbook. This is the one that I've seen. You've actually authored several. I'm thinking, when I got this, that this is called the Road to Calm Workbook. Is there a Road to Calm textbook that this is accompanying?
Well, it's an accompanying workbook to the Affect Regulation Toolbox that I wrote for professionals about 10 years ago. This workbook, however, there were a lot of requests from my colleagues that I write something for lay people. And so this workbook with a follow-up for that one.
Okay, so is it possible for somebody to go on Amazon, get the Road to Calm workbook, and just do everything here themselves, and then they'll be on the Road to Calm, or does this have to be done together with somebody, with a professional then, Carolyn Deitch?
Well, this is a very good question, Rabbi. This book is directed to all human beings who try to navigate life. The subtitle is Life-Changing Tools to Stop Runaway Emotions. And nobody in life doesn't get emotionally triggered. We get triggered by our partners, by our children, by disappointments, by worry. And you don't have to have a diagnosable anxiety disorder or emotional disorder to need to calm and manage yourself, to self-regulate. On the other hand, there are some people where their emotions are so out of control, they do need guidance. So it really varies in terms of who would need professional guidance.
Okay, so just for the average person, they could pick this up and they understand. It's very interesting that we're doing this now, and this came out now. We are within a month of Rosh Hashanah. And the month of Rosh Hashanah the month before Rosh Hashanah. There's no Jewish holidays during this time, so you don't have to worry about getting briskets or matzo balls or putting up sukkahs or anything. There's nothing to worry about. What we do have to worry about, there's always something to worry about on the Jewish calendar, is we have to worry about where's our psyche? What are we going to do? The Rosh Hashanah is coming up, and how are we going to present ourselves for next year? So people, it's called the month of stock taking. So here it is. So a person may think, well, I have an anger issue. People trigger me. I get frustrated. I have anxieties. I have stresses. And a resolution, a very good resolution that a person should take upon themselves, for example, is, in fact, it's probably the best one, is I want to improve my character so that I am a better person by this time next year.
And that makes sense, that we all need to look at ourselves so that we can have better character.
Okay. And so what would you suggest then? I have the book in front of me.
Go ahead. The first thing that I would suggest is that people do what I call the daily stress inoculation. What that means is they go into a state of calm every day. certainly can be preceded or followed by prayer. But they go into a state of calm, because in the state of calm, then you can stop reactivity. And when we're reactive, that's where harm can come. So when we're reactive, that's when we can become judgmental or angry or impulsive or overestimate bad things happening. But when we move into calm and stop the flooding of hormones, the flooding of emotions, then we can have perspective, and then we can move into the most evolved, mature part of self, perhaps the part of ourselves that is, are more observant or more adherent to the principles of Judaism.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a your car is feeding back into the microphone. But anyway, there's a lot of emphasis placed in Judaism about not getting angry, and I talk to people about anger management all the time. In fact, it goes so far as to say in the books that anger is akin to idolatry. And just as a person has to stay away from the slightest, littlest smidgen of anything that smacks of idolatry, a person should stay away from anger just as much, because anger means I am not in control. Things are not going the way I want them to go. And forgetting that we're not in control of everything that happens in our lives. In fact, we're in control of very few things that happen in our life. So let's focus on this anger thing. Ideally, what it would be, what we'd like to see, is rather than a person being angry right now and saying, okay, I'm going to count to 10 and I'm not going to blow up and whatnot, but how does a person even get to the point where how do we avoid anger then in the first place? The best thing, instead of dealing with the symptom afterwards, let's deal with like a holistic before they're getting angry, so the person doesn't get angry, Dr. Deitch.
Well, the way of approaching anger or any of the other kinds of overreaction is first to catch it when it's beginning. And how do you catch it when it's beginning? When we have an emotional response like explosive anger, we feel it in our body. The heart rate quickens, the muscles get tight. We think angry thoughts like, I can't believe he's doing this again. I could kill somebody. Who do you think you are? And we also have an emotional state. The emotional state would be being on edge, feeling uncomfortable. So what I try to train people to do is scan themselves so they catch the precursors. It's easier to put out a little bit of a fire than a forest fire, or stop a little bit of flooding than an overwhelming tsunami. And the same thing is true with the nervous system. So you need to learn to stop and catch it. Mm-hmm. I have an acronym in the book called the STOP solution. And S stands for scanning and stopping, essentially. You scan yourself and say, there I go again, there I go again. Judging people. What do I need to do? And the T stands for taking a timeout. It's virtually impossible to stop yourself unless you pause. You need to pause for at least 90 seconds for either the fear response or the anger response in the amygdala to calm down. So for 90 seconds, hopefully more, you use a calming technique. Now, I have an audio recording that accompanies the book, as well as an app that they can use to calm themselves. But it can simply be breathing or relaxing the muscles or remember what it was like being on Lake Michigan. Anything you can do to calm yourself. And then you can talk back to the brain. The O is for overcoming emotional flooding, where you deepen that relaxation. And then the P is putting the tools into practice, or I could have said perspective. At that point, once you're calm, then you can say, how important is this really? Or did this person intend to hurt me, or I'm just taking it that way? Or the adult part in you can say, you know, not everything has to go my way. I might like it to go my way, but it's unrealistic. And what is the most mature part of myself, the most spiritual part of myself. How does that part of me want to handle this? So that's kind of the protocol for it, so that you can move into what I call your wise self. Your wise self, the kind of self that would counsel somebody else. So it's easier to counsel somebody else than yourself. So that's what you would do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to go back a little bit. You've mentioned a couple of times a verb, which many people might not be familiar with, this idea of flooding. Could you describe what do you mean when you talk about emotional flooding? I get the visual, but if you could just go into a little bit more detail of what you're talking about.
Well, you've probably heard the fight, flight, or freeze reaction. It's a kind of adaptive system that's in all of us, that when we're triggered by fear, or when we're triggered by anger, when we feel vulnerable in some way, then we either want to fight our attacker, or we want to run from our attacker, or we just freeze, okay? And in that kind, with that kind of physiological phenomenon, there's a release of hormones. And those hormones are also hormones that you've probably heard of, adrenaline, norepinephrine, cortisol, that puts us in a state of activation. We're ready to kill the bear or whatever. But most of the time when we're triggered in our lives, unless we're around terrorists, they're often just irritations or aggravations or disappointments. But our system gets flooded by these hormones, which lead to out-of-control emotions, negative thoughts, and often feeling on edge.
Okay, so you're saying that there's actually a physiological reaction that's going on. Something is physically happening when a person feels themselves getting angry. It's not just that they're flooded with the thoughts, which is what I was kind of thinking, that it might be that their brain is just going too fast and they can't say stop. But you're saying there's actually something physical going on.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So I'm wondering. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's kind of like the part of the brain goes rogue, and there's not a balance between the neocortex and the emotional part of the brain. And if there's not a balance, then the more primitive part of the brain takes over, like an angry kid driving your car rather than the adult driving your car.
Got it. Now, so I'm wondering then, if you're talking physiologically then, and the steps that you're taking of the STOP program is to turn off those chemicals and turn on the other chemicals that are going on in the brain, the ones that we're all looking for, the endorphins and the serotonin, the dopamine and these things. So is it possible then, Dr. Carolyn Deitch, to be preemptive instead of stopping the flooding? Maybe I could build up, you know, through exercise and music or something else, build up all those hormones that are going to make me the happy hormones so that when the situation arises, it doesn't bother me so much.
Very good point. So part of the protocol is doing the stress inoculation, which is also guided in the recording and on the app. So every day, optimally, you spend about 20 minutes doing something calming. It could be listening to my voice on the recording. It could be doing meditation, prayer, yoga, and so on to move in a parasympathetic nervous system response. That's the calming part of the nervous system. And exercise will release it to some extent, but you also need to calm. You need to have both pillars. And that you do as a kind of prophylactic, preventative approach, almost like if you had a bad bath that went out every few months, a physical therapist would tell you to do core exercises every day, even when you didn't have a bad bath. And then I recommend about 5 additional times a day to reset the nervous system simply by going back to your breathing or doing something calming for about 90 seconds or 2 minutes. You might do it in between your classes, park your car and do it for 2 minutes. Just moving back into calm. And then you are training your nervous system to be less reactive. But even with that, sometimes we get hit by a curveball and we need to do the stop solution and take a time out, go somewhere quiet, pause, quiet your nervous system and think, how should I best handle this?
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. It sounds to me that Judaism has this built in already with the daily prayers, things that happen. Praying, I tell people, praying is not just saying the words, but praying is a way of relating to what's outside of you. Trying to relate to infinity is always a very calming thing. And here it is. We start our day, the first thing, so we have this time we're supposed to prepare for prayer, and the prayer in the morning takes a longer time. Then we're in the middle of the day and running around and losing sight of maybe perspective. We have the afternoon prayer, which takes a very short time, takes 10 minutes or so. And we're just like, it's like, here I am, I'm reconnecting. Then we have the evening prayer, which is sort of like, well, I had my day already. And then even before we go to bed, there's another shorter prayer, which is called the prayer before going to bed. And so here it is. You're recommending five times. The Torah here has given us four instances during the course of the day where a person has to basically get out of themselves, focus on something higher and something greater. Do you see a parallel there, Dr. Carolyn Deitch?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like there's nothing new under the sun. That the wise, the wisdom of the ages is being rediscovered by people like myself. And so you can package it differently, but it's the same approach. That we all need to pause. We all need to quiet. And we need to do it for a more lengthy time, and then we need to keep reminding ourselves throughout the day as just the normal aggravations and traffic and disappointments and arguments rev us up throughout the day.
Okay. Now, this may sound like I'm being a little bit glib, but I'm really not. One of the sources of anxiety and conflict is when a person is driving. They call it road rage. Somebody cuts you off. Maybe you're not going to go. Mm-hmm. You're not going to shoot the person per se, but you're really mad about what happened to that person. Can these exercises of stop be done while driving, or is that going? I would never, in the middle of say. Michigan 72 crossing from Grayling to Traverse City, pray the afternoon prayer while I'm driving because I wouldn't be able to focus on either one of them. So, but right now, the immediacy of it is this person did something. I feel affronted. Does the person need to like pull over, or they can continue driving and do all these steps that you...
They propose. Actually can continue driving. The first thing they do is, again, catch it. And they say to themselves, there's the thought that that person is really inconsiderate or a horrible driver or overbearing or over-entitled. So they catch it. And note my words. Not I'm angry at that idiot on the road, but there's the thought. There's the thought. And then what they can do is, after even just saying those words, it detaches you a little bit from it, knowing that you are more than your negative thoughts. And then you can certainly do slow breathing as you drive. Obviously, you wouldn't want to listen to my recording at that point, because you generally, I have you close your eyes, or some people are highly what we call hypnotizable, and they can go into kind of a trance. But you can do slow breathing. Now, if you're feeling yourself revved up, the exhalations are important. So in the car, you can breathe in normally and then exhale to the count of eight. And the long exhalation will calm you down. And then as soon as you're calm, these things don't matter very much. As soon as you get calm, you can kind of have curiosity about the other person. I think curiosity always diminishes judgment. Like when I, in my area, when I'm cut off a lot, I tend to drive the speed limit, which is slow for most of my other drivers on the road.
Yeah, in Michigan, you're going too slow if you're driving the speed limit, yes.
Right. And so somebody will weave in and out. And if I go into curiosity, I can say to myself, I wonder why that person is so entitled. Or I wonder why that person is so anxious. And so if I can get curious about them, I also soften my judgment. Or isn't that interesting that that person thinks their time is worth more than my time. And there's a little sardonic humor in that, but still, it softens it. But you can only soften it if you pause a little bit, even while you're driving. Another technique I have is the tight fist, where you just put all your annoyance or tension in your fist and hold it, and then slowly increase it if you were in the car driving with one hand, which you usually can do in most, it's generally safe for a moment to drive with one hand, but you don't want to do the whole ride. You can just imagine that tension is just going out the window far away from you. And that little bit of body relaxation with some breathing will soften you enough so that the person, you don't get rageful. You might still be mildly annoyed, but it just doesn't matter very much at that point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, if you're just joining us, our guest today is Dr. Carolyn Deitch, who is a clinical psychologist here in the Detroit area. She's the director of the Center for Treatment of Anxiety Disorders in Farmington Hills, and we're discussing her latest book, The Road to Calm Workbook, Life-Changing Tools to Stop Runaway Emotions. At the beginning of the book, Dr. Deitch, you talk about the actual physiology of the brain and different parts of the brain. When mm-hmm. I'm being emotional and I'm trying to control my emotions, can I feel what part of the brain I'm using? Like if I go to pick something up, I know I'm using my bicep and my tricep and my pectoral and my delts. I can feel those muscles going and working the way they're supposed to be doing it. Can I feel like a shift in my brain when I'm suddenly flooding with emotions and I have to like use my human brain to like control my basic animal instincts?
I don't think so, but you can definitely catch the expression of that part of the brain, the emotional part of the brain, responding. And there's, a physical response where your heart starts pounding and your breathing is quickened, and it's like your entire nervous system is mobilizing in case action is needed. And then you start thinking. I see a lot of anxious people, and so people start thinking, literally, I'm in danger. This is going to be a catastrophe. If I'm late for this appointment, or for example, right now I'm on a cell phone up north, so the cell power isn't working very well. I could be thinking, oh my gosh, it's going to be the end of the world, end of my reputation, and great harm for the radio show if Rabbi Finman can't hear me. That would be a typical reaction of somebody having an anxious reaction. Again, it's the manifestation. And the muscles might start getting tight, and you feel on edge. You feel uncomfortable. So those are kind of the interplay of the thoughts, feelings, and emotions that come out when those parts of the nervous system are activated.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's
explains. It's not like you feel it. You're not going to feel a pressure there.
Mm-hmm. That'd probably be a good thing. I just have to get my brain to just like move around a little bit. We talked about anger. What about some of the common phobias? Like for example, a person's like has arachnophobia and sees a spider and freaks out, or in confined spaces they're claustrophobic, and there's really nothing to worry about. And people maybe witnessing this or just watching this behavior that really is totally and completely illogical. So do we use the same steps of calming one's brain and just tell me, it's only a spider. I'm only just enclosed in this space for a certain amount of time, and this too will end. How do we deal with things like that then, Carolyn Deitch?
Well, the phobias are interesting. I think the self-talk that one should do when you're exposing yourself to a phobia, what I mean exposing yourself, if you're afraid of elevators, going into the elevator, if you're afraid of flying, taking airplane trips, the only way to get over phobias is exposure. If you avoid driving the express, you avoid the elevators and so on, you're never going to get over it. And the self-statement that you make after you've moved into calm is, I can tolerate a period of discomfort. So not expecting that the discomfort will immediately go away. For the first time somebody's on a plane, after avoiding being on a plane, they're not going to be uncomfortable. They're not going to be comfortable immediately. But what they can can get to fairly easily is recognizing that they can tolerate being uncomfortable until the discomfort diffuses. And it always diffuses. For example, I was just working with a man who was afraid of heights, and we were scouring different buildings in the neighborhood that had heights. And the more off what we did, we might have gone to 5 at once, and then it diffused. It just exposed her to fear. But the first one, I had him say, there's the discomfort about being on the third floor. I don't like it. I don't want it, but I can handle it.
Okay.
So that would be the approach for phobia, okay. Exposure and self-talk rather than I used to try to get people totally comfortable. I don't think it's realistic at first. It's just getting to that mature recognition that we've been through states of discomfort so many different times and we've lived through them.
Okay, one last catch, and we have to wipe this. It's really amazing. I'm glad that we were doing this. Person buys your book. They're this like anxious, nervous, phobic type of person, and they start on page 1, and they go all the way up to page 200, and they're doing it so well that they become like Mr. Spock. Their emotions are totally gone. First of all, is there such a worry? And is that something to worry about, the person who has no emotional reaction to a subject, Dr. Deitch?
That's not going to happen.
Okay.
That just won't happen. Our emotions are part of our being. Our lives would be pretty dull without them. We wouldn't have the joy of watching a sunset or the joy of touching a baby's cheek or the tears at a funeral. And we're just like we're wired to flee, we're wired to feel. And unless there's something very wrong with you, let's say you're autistic or have serious mental disorder, that's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a worry that I have about people being too chilled. And then the only other caveat, sometimes people are on heavy dosages of psychotropic medication, and that can dim reactions so much that they don't feel as much. But for someone who and then they're probably on too much.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of us, that's just not a worry.
Okay, understood. Thank you so much. It sounds like there's a basic tenet in Judaism, and it's probably the basic tenet of all the world's major religions and philosophies, is that hamoech shalit al halev, the brain rules the heart. Your emotions want to go charge, and your brain kind of says, it's not a good idea. So I guess that, to sum it up, that's basically what it is. Would you agree, Dr. Deitch?
I would agree, but in order to get to the neocortex, what you're calling the brain, I believe you have to pause. You have to take a mini time out or a longer time out and calm so that the system can essentially cool down.
Okay. That's going to do it for us. Again, our guest today has been Dr. Carolyn Deitch. She is the clinical psychologist of more than 25 years experience, director of the Center for the Treatment of Anxiety Disorders in Farmington Hills, and you can go on the website there and look her up if you need to speak with Dr. Deitch. The book is The Road to Calm Workbook, Life-Changing Tools to Stop Runaway Emotions. Thank you so much and wish you continued success.
It was my pleasure.
Okay.
Thank you for asking.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman, and you are listening to the Jewish Hour. I hope you're feeling much calmer now after Dr. Carolyn Deitch. And if you need her services, she is a fantastic person. Two thumbs up. For your listening pleasure, this is brand new. The artist is Chilik Hirsch, and he's a klezmer clarinetist. Together with Blue Melody, who become quite prolific in producing wonderful Jewish music, this piece is simply called the Klezmer Medley. Of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Hey, Shulfin, and here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Let's go now. This is also very new. The artist has been around. We played some stuff before. His name is Nissan. He is an African-American living in Israel, converted to Judaism. Last song we played, he did something together with God Elbaz. This is together with Yisrael Lab. The piece is called A Million Years.
Oh, realizing that Cooper's no gone until you came and dust off and revealed my spark. I was searching for the essence of existence, wanted to find you, but I didn't see an entrance. I came from a distance where everything was different. I called out to you and you showed me that you listen. From then we became best friends. I gave my all to you and you showed me who I am. I am staying by your side to bask in your light and your mercy I reside. Yours. Every time I walk straight, there's another door to help me achieve everything I need and more. More, nothing more, nothing less than going to a boat, trying to hear that voice from heaven. Your direction, I climb, but I fall flat like bread with no leaven. Please come pick me up, never ever put me down.
Someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox.
Hey, Shulfinman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Vayechi. We're ending the chapters of the book of Genesis. Next week we'll be starting the book of Exodus. We conclude with the blessings of Jacob too. His children, and the promise of the eventuality of the coming messianic era. But we're not talking about that. We're going to talk about today. Today is the 10th day of Tevis. It is a fast day on the Jewish calendar from dawn until dusk. The fast commemorates the day that Nebuchadnezzar broke through, no, excuse me, the fast commemorates the day that Nebuchadnezzar approached the city of Jerusalem. Nebuchadnezzar, his goal was to rule the entire world. And he understood that if Jerusalem's still around, he's not ruling the entire world. He looked at it as being the anti-Nebuchadnezzar. And we look at Nebuchadnezzar as being the anti-Jerusalem. This fast day is such that were it to fall even on a Shabbos, on a Saturday,
we would have to fast. Now, in all other fast days, except for Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, if they fall out on a Saturday, we push them off either to a Sunday or we bring them up to a Thursday. We don't fast on Shabbos because it's a day of rest. It's supposed to be when you're having delight. But here it is. This day, the way the calendar is set up such, it happens that today will never fall out on a Saturday. The 10th day of Tevis will never fall on a Saturday, which is good because that way we don't have to fast. Even when it falls out on a Friday, it's tough enough, even though it is the shortest fast of the year. It's less than 12 hours here in Detroit. But Friday night, Kiddush, the first thing you break your fast on is a nice cup of wine. It has a tendency to really put people to sleep, you might say. But what's the deal? Why is there such placement put on just some random army coming to try to attack? They didn't do anything yet. They just approached the city. But this is where the beginning of the end is. Had they not approached the city, they never would have conquered it. So it's looked upon that when a person is about to start doing something, really and actually, they're not just starting it. What they're doing now is realizing the potential. So we're going to take a good lesson from this bad occurrence, which is always a good thing. A person looks and says, I have a lot to do. Or, what I have to do is overwhelming. It's the wrong attitude. They should look at it rather as, how would they look once it's finished? They would say, I feel a sense of accomplishment. So why can't a person say, I feel a sense of accomplishment before they accomplish anything? That sounds dumb, I know. But if we have such an attitude that yes, that which I'm about to embark on, as far as the great scheme of time goes, as far as the Almighty even goes, it's like I did it already. It only works for good things, by the way. If a person's about to do something bad, they didn't do something bad until he did something bad. But don't think about doing bad things. So here it is that what eventually happened with the 10th of Tevis. The 10th of Tevis led up to the 17th of Tammuz, which is in the summer. Some 3 years later is when it happened. But that's when the Nebuchadnezzar's army broke through the walls. It took 3 years. So we see that people want things to happen right now. But it doesn't always happen that way. Sometimes we can never know what it is that we have already accomplished. So when looking at today, and we're fasting, and the whole purpose of our fasting is to arouse ourselves to want to get closer to God, so that Mashiach's imminent coming be not imminent, it be right now, before this afternoon, we can look and we can say, we want the Mashiach, we want the Messianic era right now. We've been saying it now for close to 2,000 years. We must be much closer. Speaking of much closer, we've got to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
You are listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Best way, rabbifinman.com, rabbifinman.com. And you'll find on right on the homepage a contact link. Contact me. I'll contact you. We'll establish this wonderful email relationship, and we'll live happily ever after. You'll also find archived editions of the radio show, a whole year's worth now. Archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, different media in which yours truly conveys Judaism in a hopefully entertaining and educational way. You'll also find the very, very important donations page. Yes, we finally paid November. We only owe Salem Communications for December and January. And we did this once. We will be making this pledge to you that if we pay off January before the end of the month, we're not going to talk about raising funds anymore. So then, go to the rabbifinman.com. Click on the donations page. Make it a monthly gift. It's very easy to do. Just hit monthly, and then you don't have to worry about it. A little, a lot of times, is as good as a lot once. You know how that is. Everything adds up. Do it today. Don't like internet giving? We have a new address. Send your donation to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, P-I-N-E-C-R-E-S-T, Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. You'll be glad you did, and thank you so much. There's a story. This one goes back post-World War II. And the reason why we're doing this is today is Holocaust Kaddish Day. There are those people who have taken upon themselves to say the prayer of commemorating the anniversary of a death for all those people who died on the Holocaust who have no one to remember their passing. And so they say Kaddish in Yad Vashem and other places today for all of those people. So post-World War II, in the Pucking, Germany, displaced persons camp, there were two friends who reunited after the war. One of them was named Mordechai Greenfield. The other one was named Jonasson Engel. And they applied for visas to go to Canada. Mordechai Greenfield got a visa to go to Canada, but because Jonasson Engel had typhoid, he was denied as being a sick person, and they wouldn't let sick people into Canada at that time. As he's about to leave and get on his whatever means of transportation to get to Canada, he met his friend, Mr. Engel, and started crying. What am I supposed to do? No one is going to allow me into their country because I'll have to put on my records that I had typhoid. Without hesitating, Mordechai Greenfield told Mr. Engel, "Your name now is Mordechai Greenfield. Take my papers and go." And he said, "Well, what are you going to do?" He said, "I'm healthy. I'll get another name." So what happened? Some time passed, several months actually. Somebody by the name of Moshe Weinberg had a visa to go to Canada, but died. And this Mordechai Greenfield took on the name of Moshe Weinberger. This Moshe Weinberger just recently passed away in Montreal. After about 20 years of living in Canada, he went to his Rebbe, who was Rabbi Chaim Meir Hagar, known as the Imre Chaim, the Vizhnitzer Rebbe of the time, quite a righteous man in himself. And asked him that he's living in Canada so long, should he change, as Moshe Weinberger, should he change his name back to Mordechai Greenfield? The Vizhnitzer Rebbe said to him, "If you would be able to see the clamor that goes on in heaven every time someone says the name Moshe Weinberger, because of the self-sacrifice that you displayed unhesitantly for a friend, you would never have asked me that question. And you'll keep the name," and he blessed him and said, "you'll keep the name Moshe Greenberg for many long years." He lived well into his 90s, this Moshe Greenberg. That's going to do it for us today. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week and stay warm wherever you are. And we hope to see you back again next week. Take care.
Vikurai,